I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today are mis compañeros.
Oh, muy sí.
Father Garrett Burns.
Ándale pues, ¿cómo estamos?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
Hola.
Sounds like you're a little rusty on the old Spanglish.
We were at Prost last night, and a guy walked up and, like, I assume, said hello, how are you, or something in German. And Drew goes, oh, see.
Like, the only language
if
I
you
know.
Don't speak English, then you better speak.
I do that, though, too. Anytime, like, if I'm in a foreign country, anyone addresses me in a foreign language, I instantly go to Spanish in my head.
Spanish is the only one I know.
Yeah, that's right.
And in Italy, I mean, I've only been to Italy once, but
You can get away with it.
You can just talk in Spanish and people usually will know what you're saying. But yeah, I only know one foreign language. And so.
Well, today we are sitting in the studio of Saint Rock.
Mm.
Wow.
Obviously.
Not Saint the Rock.
Not Saint the Rock. Just Saint Rock.
Okay.
Which I actually don't know a lot about Saint Rock. I don't know if either of you, I mean, I know the basics.
I know someone took him as a knight's name just because they thought it was a cool name.
It was a cool church in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah?
Right down from my favorite coffee shop. But then there was also a church in St. Louis called The Rock. I think it was Alphonsus Liguori, and they called it The Rock Church. Mm. I don't know why. I don't remember that story. That one was kind of up by Fox on Grand. But then this one was kind of by Central, by Cedar Park. I'm getting into a St. Louis conversation here with myself.
Where'd you go to high school? Right.
But yeah, I don't know why but there was St. Rock and The Rock, and it was confusing. But I don't know anything about St.
Rock. Yeah.
Italian pilgrim saint. He's the one that always shows, like, lifting the wounded knee and the dog nearby. So I think he's one of the patron saints of cancer. He was served plague victims. On the Camino, there's a giant statue of him as pilgrim. So he's honored a lot, even though he's Italian, he's honored in Spain. And so there's that, you get up to the top of the hill and there's this just 8 foot tall bronze statue of Saint Rock there. And it's called Saint Rock Pass. But Italian saint.
Does he intercede at all for scooter victims? Because...
I am. Well, you want to see a wounded knee?
Is your knee?
My knee. My pants are ruined from that.
Wow!
I was in a scooter accident.
Father Drew walks into the studio. He's got short sleeves on, and he's just got a pretty wicked wound on the bottom of his arm. And the first thing I ask him, was that a scooter accident?
He knew. That's amazing. I had not told him that.
But I didn't know. And, your knee's all wrecked up too.
Well, he knew you weren't out there like rock climbing or like just like.
Scooters are about as wild as I get, my electric scooter.
Yeah, was it your personal scooter that you wrecked?
Yeah.
Or were you? See, I would assume you would know.
No, and I was racing somebody who has their own scooter as well. And like the students were watching. It was
scooter
dumb.
Game.
It was
scooter game.
I would watch that for the same reason I watched NASCAR, just for the wrecks.
Yeah, I knew exactly how it would end. I had to learn that lesson myself, though. Yeah. But I'm running out of pants is the problem. They keep destroying, like, we're playing Jungle Park.
You're like a third grader.
Yes! This student said, you look like you just came home from recess. Yeah. So because my pants were all ruined and I'm bloody. He's like, I'm sure I came home from St. Elizabeth recess looking exactly like
this. I know, but I had to slide 8 times at soccer recess.
We'll play Jungle Pong in the basement. I'll dive for ping pong balls and rip up pants and things like that. I've spent a lot of money on...
I don't think I've had that problem pants. Since college. Yeah.
That's my life.
Touche.
St. Rock, pray for him.
I used to run into that because we'd go to, all my dress pants would be ruined. My friends and I were very exuberant dancers. And so we'd go to like wedding dances and things like that and would just wear out knees and just destroy pants.
I don't ever know if you actually do this, but when we were young, we would always think we needed the Father Chad rule, which is if you can dance to one song and then everybody knew you danced to that one song, you don't have to dance again the rest of the night, especially as a seminarian or as a priest.
That's how it worked.
And so is it your Shout?
Shout, Isley Brothers, Shout.
He does an incredible rendition of Shout.
Yeah. It's a aerobic workout. I don't know if I can even do it anymore.
Yeah, and then everyone knows you were there and knows you danced, but you don't have
There's
to dance.
There's a story the rest from
of the
it.
Yeah, you don't have to dance the rest of the night and people aren't giving you grief about it.
The last time I did that, because it is a high intensity affair for me, when the song was, because it's like a 6 minute song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a six up minute mile with, you know, jumping jacks and all those. I was not in as good of shape as I used to be. And so the very last time I danced to that song, and then I went out into the parking lot and threw up. Because it was like it was like I had just done a cross-country race. No, like, my body was rejecting me. I danced so hard to shout that I had to go and throw up outside as a priest. And I think that's the last time I've done that.
That's going to be the new Father Chad thing. If you throw up at a wedding reception, pulling a Chad.
If you're not throwing up after you dance, you didn't really dance.
Super funny.
But, well, we are the Saint Rock Studio, obviously, because we are still on Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He's still here helping us out. We are going to record one more later this morning, and it's also going to be part of the theme. So, listeners, you can start placing your bets now for next week on what the studio will be called. We've been Saint Peter The Rock, Saint Rock.
I like this.
What will be the third saint in the theme of Dwayne The Rock Johnson? Now, this week, not this week that we are recording, but this week that this will be listened to, falling on being aired. What do you call
it.
Podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, really, what do you
drop? It's going to drop.
It's a drop?
Drop. Okay. When's the pod going to drop?
I don't feel right. It feels like slaying all over again. It just seems like I'm faking if I use that. The week this drops.
Attaboy.
That will be the week of the annual clergy conference. So, it's something I look forward to every year, but I don't know if, you know, I take it for granted, but probably most lay people of the diocese only have a vague idea of what the clergy conference is. So one of you want to kind of explain, I guess, first off, what it is?
Yeah, so every year, this is the Diocese of Wichita's tradition, is that every year, all of the Wichita priests are expected, you're expected there. It's not like, hey, if you can make it.
Right.
From a Monday afternoon through a Thursday morning at the Spiritual Life Center. You're there the whole time. And Bishop asks that masses consider canceling your daily masses for that day, but there's different, you know, guys have different things going on and stuff like that. So you might still have your morning mat or whatever the case might be. But the expectation is you're there at the Spiritual Life Center for that time. And so it contains a variety of academic teachings. There's, you know, usually there's presenters on maybe something that Lauren, there's formation, mass together, prayer together, hanging out together. It's a chance both for the guys to get some information and to be together as brothers for the week. All of the Wichita priests in one place.
And I think everybody look, I know I look forward to it, but I think generally the whole presbyterate, it's a good week.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's, you know, there's a few outliers that may, you know, as there is in any group, but by and large, I mean, responsibilities kind of put on the back burner for a little bit from the parish. You come together, you relax, pray together, learn together, enjoy one another. It's really essential for keeping the brotherhood strong. So I know, like, some parishes, some people struggle with the idea, oh, how can you cancel mass? Well, that is hard, but this is also for the longevity, for the health of the presbyterate, for the health of the diocese. So yeah, we have to make this sacrifice for these 2 or 3 days in this week. But the other end of that is so important, so tremendous, that it's even worth that sacrifice.
Adam Kider, who we've all been assigned with, actually, would always make a big deal. He was our pastor at the cathedral about any time you get a chance, but especially at the clergy conference, make sure you're sitting with the older guys. Make sure you're at meals and stuff. You're spending some time with not only guys you don't usually get to spend time with in general, but particularly the older guys, because that's really the only time you have set aside time with retired priests, with nearing retired priests who have been through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we, the young guys, think they're hot shots. And so to learn from guys who have seen a lot of things, it's to set aside time to be around a lot of priests, but particularly maybe some priests that you wouldn't have any other access to during the year. And that can be really fulfilling and life-giving.
Well, I think we're especially blessed in that I remember talking to guys in seminary, they're being very intimidated going back to their diocese. They just sense this big rift of older generation of priests versus younger generation of priests. And I have never felt that.
No.
And clergy conference is the best example of that. Of, I don't like seek out the table I'm going to go to. It's just kind of like seats open here with guys from this and the next generation. And we all just, we have the priesthood that joins us. And it's something really cool about that.
I've never really thought about that, but I'd never be nervous about sitting at a table.
Right.
Or, yeah. Like, this is going to be, oh, geez, this is going to be a nightmare. Or, okay, I better keep my mouth shut at this table. And I do think some of our brother dioceses mm-hmm. have that experience. I've never once had that experience as a Wichita priest.
Any priest of the diocese I could have a meal with.
Absolutely.
One of the things we plan into the clergy conference is there's kind of an afternoon that's left open just to have fun, which is, again, a good thing for brothers to do. And so yeah, there's always a golfing group that goes out.
Duh.
There's always a disc golfing group going out.
This became a thing yesterday. So yesterday we had our ongoing formation meeting. So the priests of the diocese that are kind of on the, there's maybe six or seven of us. And Father Walsh made a big scene about the disrespect that disc golf receives. And that it's always like this, they always announce, hey, if you guys want to golf, we'll be at Sand Creek at 1:30. Just meet there. If you want to play pickleball here, if you want to do. And then disc golf is like this extra thing that gets thrown on the top of it. I was like, yeah, it is, because it's, we're playing real golf. I don't understand.
Ball golf. You're playing
ball golf.
They make that specification here.
Disc golf. I don't like disc golf.
But in fairness, that's also how disc golf people live their lives. I mean, like,
that's a great
point. Ball golf, you've got to plan ahead and you have your group and you buy clothes and things. And disc golf, like, well, I got nothing going on this afternoon and it's not too windy. I guess I'll get a soda and go throw a frisbee.
Thank you, Chad.
I mean, that's how they live.
Gary's a disc golf guy. Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. More than ball golf, for sure.
See, and I'm not either. So I was always trying to put together things that for that crowd. And so we've gone axe throwing before. We've gone high-speed go-kart racing before. And those are fun because they always bring in an eclectic group of guys from the different age range, like you were talking about. Like McGinnis was super competitive on the high-speed go-kart racing. Okay. Like he was all over the course on that. He was taking no prisoners. And then like last year we did pickleball and whole age range of guys on the pickleball court.
And last year, one evening, we had dueling pianos and like karaoke and stuff, right?
I think that was at the March overnight.
Oh, but maybe
same
right.
thing.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
do. Then also we do one of these in March, just an overnight, same thing to get all the guys together. But the dueling pianos was cool. Just play golf. I don't understand. Just play golf. Young men, if you're discerning, Cardinal.
Oh my gosh. George.
Cardinal George in Chicago once said that the biggest problem with his young priests is that they don't play enough golf. And I've never actually seen that confirmed that he said that.
I'm going to ask Bishop Kemi about that. He personally knew Cardinal George.
That he said that. And so
I'm going to call a question on that one.
But clergy conference is a blast. We had Father H. Setter is a cigar aficionado, and he taught a class on cigars last year, which was really cool.
I wish I would have gotten, so I don't smoke at all, but just for the information, hanging out on the back porch, I wish I would have gone to it. I didn't go to it because I don't smoke.
It was so interesting of, hey, this is how they wrap, and this is the thought process, and this was the different types and stuff like that. It was actually really, really educational, absurd maybe as that sounds. But
well, one of the other things, too, that I love that I never thought I would like is every year at the clergy conference, we have a big banquet. And it's when we celebrate the jubilarians, guys that are, you know, celebrating priesthood 25 years, 40 years, 50 years, whatever it is. And I remember the very first year I had a little bit of a funeral. And so I had the funeral and I could have made it back in time for the banquet, but I kind of just didn't. Because in my mind, I was thinking seminary banquets, like when we were in theology, we were required to go to these banquets that were mandatory and weren't very fun. And it was like, oh, it's just this version of that in the priesthood. And so I missed the banquet my very first year. I was talking with, actually it was Adam Kider. And he's like, no, man, you make it to these because these are so good. They're fun. And then the guys that are celebrating the Jubilee at the end will give like a little talk. And some guys talk a long time. Some guys talk a short time. But there are some really, when you get some of those guys that are celebrating 40, 50 years and they're looking back and just telling you what they love. You know, I'll never forget Ivan Eck telling us, stay to the breviary. You know,
60 years ordained, 70 years ordained. And that was his the moral is love the breviary.
Yeah. One of the Kirshen brothers, there are two twin brothers that are priests of the diocese, Leo and Leon. One is passed away. And so the other one was giving the talk and just talking about how much, what a blessing the priesthood was for him and his twin brother and how much, and he can be a little bit of a rougher old guy. And just hearing him just be just so honest and vulnerable about how much he loved the priesthood and the diocese and how he and his twin brother were able to share that in a really unique way. I mean, it was emotionally moving. It was a 3-minute talk. It wasn't long, but it was just beautiful. And so to hear some of those guys just kind of share some of those things, I love the banquet. I never miss it now.
Yeah, and it's like a reminder for me every year. It's like, that's the goal. Like, I'm caught up in a lot of stuff. I'm trying to figure out and get these programs and blah, blah, going. Like, The goal is to be faithful to my breviary till I'm 100, you know, and just to be a faithful priest and do what you're asked for the rest of your life. And these guys have done it. And
right.
So they have some deep wisdom to share with me that maybe I could fall and be that faithful as well.
I think Jerry Beat of Happy Memory and Wayne Schmidt were at the same one speaking. And to hear those guys talk, who would have come of age and become priests in the very recent post-Vatican II church when a lot of their brothers either didn't get ordained or left priesthood. And that was just such a tumultuous time. And to hear them, to see them stay, our problems are so tiny compared to them. And what kept them, you know, Wayne's experience of the military and Jerry's love for the missions and things like that, that really moved me. And so it's a great experience to hear these guys talk.
Yeah, the whole week's a wonderful week. And so if you are listening to this, if you'd be so kind perhaps too to offer up a prayer for the priest of the diocese, because we're all gathering together this week to help one another, to support one another, to pray to one another that we can be better priests and better serve the people of God and better serve our Lord. So if you're listening to this week, if you would be so kind as to offer a prayer for the priests. Now, from time to time, we get questions from listeners of the podcast, and I do keep track of them. So if you have sent in a question and we have not addressed it yet, we will. It's coming. There is a plan for that. We just haven't gotten to it yet. But occasionally, a question that comes through really strikes me or seems relevant at that particular time. And so I want to look at one of those today. The question that we're going to look at today comes from a senior at Bishop Carroll, and he writes, I was wondering, how do you guys deal with burnout? To use a secular term, you could say that saying Mass is, quote unquote, your job. How do you guys handle feeling burnt out and not just going through the motions? Where do you want to start? I started making notes on them like, actually, I got a lot of things to say about that. I don't know where to even start with that.
Yeah, I think it's a constant temptation, I guess. It's one of the things I like about having Spanish Mass. Just because I have to be much more attentive.
Yeah, I can
because
see that.
Because even I know the words, I've said Spanish Mass enough, but like I've been going to English Mass my whole life. So all the words, you know, I know and I could easily zone out. And she's like, well, okay, I just consecrated the Eucharist and I didn't really think about it. So that's sometimes nice for me of just, it's something a little different that keeps me engaged. And yeah, I think one of the things that was big for me at Cathedral, just during Advent and maybe we did during Lent, we did Ad Orientem. And so that is something that has stuck with me in the way I celebrate Mass even versus populum towards the people is just really focusing in on the crucifix. And that just keeps me centered. And like, what am I doing is speaking to the Father on behalf of the people and offering their prayers as a mediator, as a priest. And so just that little thing of a focus, because it's easy to just get up and your eye catches something else or you're looking at the people a little bit. And so to have your spot to keep you centered and that keeps it fresh because there's always something new to offer.
I find that about the Mass in general too, the idea that there are so many pieces to it. Like, and if I ever feel myself getting kind of stale in how I'm celebrating, I'm like, I'm just going to focus on a different piece for a little while. And every part of the Mass is such a deep dive and richness to it. I'm like, all right, today I'm just focusing on the Creed, or I'm focusing on the Gloria on a Sunday Mass. And like just the thoughts that would come into that piece, the penitential rite is a big focus point for me. And the emotions that brings up, the thoughts and the prayer, I mean, that can carry through the rest of the Mass. And so I'm looking at the entire Mass through the lens of the Gloria, or through the lens of the penitential rite, or through the lens of the Creed. And so anytime I feel myself kind of getting stale, I'm like, well, I haven't explored the Mass through the lens of this piece of the Mass. And so I'll try and take a deeper dive in that. And that really enriches how I celebrate the Mass.
I want to handle this gently because I know this is a tough topic sometimes, but we have at the 11:45 Mass at St. Paul, because it's in the middle of the day, we have a lot of families come to it. So we have a lot of crying kids at the 11:45 Mass, and I love it. Like, I want to be super
duper
clear.
You are a terrible person.
No, I want to be so clear in that it's awesome. It is so great. It is so great. But a lot of times it gets, because especially St. Paul's is a low
ceiling
building, and it's not that big of a space, and so it gets pretty loud in there. And actually, my experience has been that has focused me more on the work, because I've had to kind of lock in because of the loudness that's going on. And the loudness is, again, it's like, oh my gosh, you're bringing your five kids to Mass, and it's these kids, I can't imagine what they're going through. And so it is such a gift that they're bringing, and it actually, strangely, has helped me pray better. It's actually been a gift to my prayer, because it's shaken me out of any complacency, going through the motions and things like that. I thought that was a strange thing that I've experienced maybe the last 6 weeks or so as school has started back up. That's something that I've noticed, that even the disruptions of mass have been a gift for my focus. Whereas if everyone was just as perfectly silent, okay, that's great too. I'm sure there would have been gifts there too, but maybe that would have been more of a,
that's cool.
Of a temptation. So that's been kind of a cool experience in my prayer.
Yeah, that makes you think of the times it feels most mechanical or even, just my job or whatever, is when there's a lack of participation from the people. Because, it's life-giving when there's people are singing and they respond to you and the proper responses and everything. And, you know, sometimes it's a wedding or a funeral, and sometimes, you know, people have been away from the faith or they're not even Catholic. But those for me are tough because then it really feels like, I don't know, I'm just performing for everybody. Yeah. And this is not a dialogue where I'm offering the sacrifice to the Father. It's just kind of like I'm doing this thing.
Those are hard. I've had a funeral, and I'm sure you guys have too, where it's, there are people there and they've been away from the faith. So it's great that they've come back for the funeral, but they don't know what's going on in the mass. And so it's like me and the organist. Yeah. We're the only ones saying any of the parts in this. And there's a sadness in that, but you're right. It's also hard in some ways to pray because you do feel like you're performing, or even just that there's such a sadness of like, I get distracted by the sadness of it that they don't know anything of what's going on.
One of the things that has helped me is that early on, this is the day of my first mass. I'm looking through my stuff. Garrett gives me a book to keep track of my masses, who I said masses for there. And I don't actually remember. Why had we talked about that beforehand, or did you just think that was going to be a cool idea?
Yeah.
So he gives that, and there's a great prayer in the front of it for the priest. Okay. So from that day, I have kept track of every mass I've ever said, where I said it, and who I said it for. Wow. And I keep track of it in an Excel sheet, and then every once in a while, fill it in the book, because it's just a lot easier for me to do. But that has actually helped a lot because it's kind of cool. So I've said like 2,650 masses or something like that. And you know that number, okay, it's just thrown out there. But with all of those, I have where I said it, which is kind of just a good memory when I look back, but then also who I'm saying it for and who I said it for. So the fact that a mass is said for a particular intention has been then, I like doing that because for the many and for the one specific that mass is offered. So whatever else is happening, I am offering the sacrifice of the mass for a specific intention that can be assisted by the celebration of this mass. And so when that temptation to complacency, roboticness, okay,
that's always new. It's always
fresh. It's always something that can be offered up, that this very specific intention, no matter what else is going on, that name that's read at the beginning of mass as I process out, okay, that is someone I can be praying for at this mass.
That's cool. I've never actually heard of that custom of keeping track of masses.
I don't know like why that. You did. It's cool.
I like it. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a cool thing.
I mean, I've heard of priests, and I wish I would have done this. I haven't, but I know priests that like keep track of all the kids they've baptized on the funerals. I wish I had done that because now it's also kind of embarrassing because I'll go to like friends like, yeah, you baptized our kids. Of course I did.
Yes,
I remember it like it was yesterday. What's your kid's name?
Yeah. So the kind of the specific nature that the mass is offered for something has been helpful for me.
And yeah, I think it just comes back to if I'm engaged in my daily prayer, then I see that in the mass. If I'm a little bit disengaged in that, I haven't really done my holy hours, or at least not as attentively, then that easily just bleeds into, well, I'm just going to get this thing done. But if I've prayed with the gospel, that's something new every day. If I've entered into this of who I'm going to offer it for, of who I'm really praying for, of what's going on, then the mass is where I take all of that. But if I haven't done that work beforehand, then yeah, it's just like, okay, I gotta do this thing. So it just comes back to just like anybody's to have full active participation, it takes some prep work.
Yeah. And then I think all the stuff we just talked about with clergy conference is part of this too. How do I keep from burning out? How do I keep from wearing out? How do I keep from being robotic? Sometimes I gotta take a few days to be with the bros. Well, and sometimes I've gotta cancel mass in a certain sense. I'm still saying mass every single day, but to say it in a different space to make sure that rejuvenation, that energy is still there.
Right. I think, I don't know if our questioner meant to that, but kind of expanding that question out about burnt out in general in priesthood, that's a big part of how you avoid being quote unquote burnt out in the priesthood, because it can happen. It has happened. but it is making sure that you're taking time with the brothers. We've talked about it before on the retreat, but it's important that you are taking vacation time. That helps protect, that you are keeping track of your day off and making sure you use your day off, that you are doing your yearly retreat, that you are keeping your daily prayer in life. All of those pieces are part of bringing about that healthy priesthood so you don't get burnt out. Now, it helps a lot. Frankly, I love what I do. I mean, that's not a complete suit of armor against being burnt out, but it helps a whole lot is that I love what I do as a priest. You know, 95% of what I do, I would do for free and would be volunteering to do, you know, and that I get to focus my entire life on it. That's awesome. That helps a lot for me with the burnt out, but it's not a complete protection, obviously, because there are still bad days. There are still days you're going through the motions, you get tired, but day off, retreat, vacation, daily prayer, all of those are going to help fill in those gaps of when I'm not feeling it. And you got to be able to know when to take it. Be able to know yourself and be aware of yourself, because burnt out it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you just wake up one day, I'm burnt out. No, you've been drifting in that direction, and you've got to be able to, maybe with the help of your spiritual director, or just self-knowledge, be able to recognize, no, I've been burning the candle at both ends. I've got to give myself some rest here. One of the brothers was just telling me a story the other day, a lesson he learned from his first pastor, and I'd never heard the story before, but it's sad, but also really good to this point. And the pastor had a funeral that morning for an infant, which, you know, those are always hard. Those are always tragic. And so he walked through this family with this immense grief and done this funeral for this baby. And this other priest, who was his associate, comes into him after the funeral and said, okay, well, we've got this going on this afternoon and this in the evening. And his pastor just looked at him and just said, you know what? I just buried an infant. I think that's all I'm going to do today. Mm. And he went back to the rectory to rest, to pray, to take care of himself. And that is absolutely the right call. Yeah. And that was a very impactful learning moment for that priest, the associate, and he carries with it. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You got to know yourself, and you got to know when you need to take it. And it's okay to say, you know what? I'm done today. I need to be with the Lord. I need to rest. I need to sleep, whatever it is. I think that's part of the reason for me too, that sleep is important. So I like to work out. Part of that, those things keep me emotionally healthy, so that I can keep going. Because when you're emotionally out of balance, it's going to throw all these other things out there. So that's an important part for me in avoiding being burnt out.
That funeral example just made me think something I didn't expect coming into priesthood. Just to say any mass, especially maybe on a Sunday, it can be exhausting. Like, you know,
surprisingly tiring.
Going into the seminary, I'm like, you're just standing up there saying some stuff. Like, okay, you got to hold your hands up a little bit for a couple of minutes. But like, what are you so tired from? But hopefully that's something of I'm engaged and I am joined in this sacrifice, but it's something that surprised me, I guess, that
me too,
not even to get burnt out, just like this is the same thing over and over, but there's something emotionally draining from entering into the mass.
Yeah. And then in addition to the mass, the meetings that, you know, meetings that we'll have at 4, 5, 6, 7 meetings a day. And you get to the end of the day, it's like, I don't have anything left in the tank. Mm-hmm. And so to have people in your life that are keeping an eye, there's this great video of me. I had when I was at Izzy's, just a brutal day of me, like some really rough stuff in some students' lives. And I came into the lobby and I just collapsed onto the floor of the lobby. And there's a video of some of our folks missionaries reading me a children's book to try to like, it's like you revive are loved you. Or something like that. And so like that, and that's silly, but it, like the students could tell, okay, we're kind of on the verge of just total exhaustion here. Okay, we're joking around, but to have people in your life who can notice that stuff, mention that stuff, be with you in that stuff is really vital.
Yeah, yep. I was visiting the school kids and they're just like, what do you do all day? You know, it's kind of one of those questions. So I said, well, just for example today, and I kind of listed off and I had this meeting with this person, there was a counseling and they want to baptize, they're having a marriage prep, blah, blah, blah. And one of the kids goes, you have a lot of meetings. I mean, that's what I do. I meet with people. I'm with people. Yeah, that's what I do. But it can get exhausting. So
yeah, I can definitely tell sometimes I'm sitting in the office and you just get that 100-yard stare and it'll be like, nope, I need to go eat something or I need to take a walk around the block or go to the chapel. I need to get out of this office chair because I am not doing anyone any favors right now.
So a student saw me walking at a part of campus I don't usually walk the other day. Usually I walk where students are, but I wasn't walking where students usually are. Like, what are you doing? I was like, I just needed to walk. Too many meetings. I needed to walk where I didn't think I was going to see anybody rather than the campus where I'm going to shake hands and kiss babies and stuff like that.
And so it's always striving for that balance of you do need to take care of yourself. But as priests, we are called to be sacrifice sacrificial for others. And so we do have to push ourselves. So sometimes maybe we do go to that closer to that line than secularly would be wise. We do have to push ourselves, but also take care of ourselves. I actually was just reading a short story the other day, and it was the author was talking about a lesson he learned from his father that I really like, and I think it applies to the priesthood in a lot of ways. And his father had taught him, he said, you know, anytime things get rough with your own family or whatnot, anytime things get rough, he said, always stay true to the rule of the Titanic, women and children first. Mm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that in the priesthood. Mm. We've got to take care of ourselves. We've got to be able to avoid burnout. But we also have to remember the rule of the Titanic, women and children first. And all of those of the parish are our children. All of the people that we are serving are our spiritual children. And so as we look for that balance to make sure we're not sacrificing ourselves unnecessarily, but also still sacrificing women and children first. And I really like that idea and that story. I've been praying a lot with the last few days with that. Well, I think we're over time, so we'll wrap up there for today. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and it comes from Pope Benedict XVI. He says, "The faithful expect one thing from priests, that they be specialists in promoting the encounter between man and God. The priest is not asked to be an expert in economics, construction, or politics. He is expected to be an expert in the spiritual life." See you next week.